Thanks and good morning. So, today I'll be speaking about nutrient cycling in a gradient of increased cropping system diversity, and I'll say ahead of time that this is cropping system diversity, so it's not diversity in the traditional sense, and I'll explain that in a moment. So, the system we work at is the Kellogg Biological Station in Michigan. It's an LTER NSF site. And for the last 15 years, they've established a biodiversity gradient in name, but as I will describe, it's really sort of a cropping system complexity gradient. So it's been in place for the last 15 years. It's a randomized complete block design. And the increased rotational complexity really comes from this monoculture-based system, corn, soy, rotations of corn, soy, wheat, and then integration of different levels of cover cropping with either cereal rye or clover. There's over the course of this experiment, there hasn't been any chemical inputs. Tillage is used to control weeds, and this will be the 15th year that this study has gone on. So that's sort of the setup, but let me step back for a minute and just say what the sort of broader outline of why this is important. Obviously, row crop systems, particularly corn, soy, wheat, dominate the Midwest landscapes. Many places, upwards of 80% to 90% of the landscape is dominated by this system. And oftentimes it relies heavily on inputs, which can be both costly and inefficient at times. So there's this idea that we can increase cropping system complexity and enhance soil ecosystem processes, particularly with in relation to soil mineralization. So this is something we wanted to try and measure over the last few years, particularly with gas fluxes of nitrous oxide, carbon dioxide, measuring enzyme activities, and carbon and nitrogen dynamics in the system. We also thought that the soil microbial community would change under the gradient of cropping system complexity and would increase concomitant with enhanced microbial cycling of nutrients. And I want to introduce just a brief model, a sort of roadmap that we used when we thought about the processes that might be happening in the system. So, in thinking about species richness and environmental processes, we thought about the difference between narrow processes and broad processes. And so, the way that we think about this is narrow processes such as methane oxidation or nitrification, there are a few species that carry these things out. And as a result, we think of that their process magnitude will be a little bit lower based on the diversity of that process or the narrowness of that process. But the process variability might increase a great deal because of the narrowness of that process. Broad processes that are carried out by numerous organisms such as soil respiration, carbon mineralization, they're more functionally redundant. And so that process may increase in magnitude a great deal, but that process may increase in magnitude a great deal, but the variability of that process may be reduced. So just as a quick outline of what that might look like, some cumulative data of just CO2 flux from this gradient, you can see that sort of increases linear with the complexity of the cropping system. However, nitrous oxide flux, it's much more variable in terms of under the cover crop systems. So those of you familiar with something like denitrification, it's broadly distributed phylogenetically, but it's also a little bit more complex in terms of things like nitrification changing with more complex systems. Okay, so just some more sort of background data on what the system looks like. So after 15 years, the total soil carbon in the system is not altered greatly. So under the cover crop system portion of the gradient, there has been a little bit of increase in carbon, but it hasn't increased a great deal. If you control for sand, these are pretty sandy systems in Michigan. There's a sort of slight significance in increasing carbon. But this might not be surprising also because these systems are controlled, the weeds in these systems are controlled with tillage. So you can have a great deal of carbon input, but really you're releasing carbon pretty rapidly and regularly in the system. And just to show that a little bit more, this is just some typical yields from years past. Corn yields with the county average to the far right. And, you know, it's especially in the case of corn, it's dramatic yield differences under cover crop versus no cover crop versus continuous corn. The story is similar for something like soy, although the differences in yield are not as great, and also for wheat. So you have these dramatic sort of differences in carbon inputs into the system, both in terms of the crop yield itself and incorporation of cover crops, but the carbon has not changed a great deal. So looking briefly at the sort of change in bacterial community structure across the gradient, and just visualizing with an NMDS plot, there's actually a great deal of overlap in the communities at the 16S level with sort of a coarse level analysis of the bacterial communities in the system. But we have observed regularly this increase in sort of this change in the homogeneity of the microbial community structure across the gradient. So what I mean by that is the communities that are on continuous corn tend to be pretty constrained in their phylogenetic diversity, and they sort of radiate out a little bit with increased cropping system complexity. And there is some degree of difference by cover crop versus no cover crop comparisons in the community structure. Less so by rotation. So this is sort of a snapshot of what is in the soil and a little bit of what its capacity is. But really, I think what we found is where the action in the system is what's actually functioning over the course of the growing season. So these are relativized enzyme activity rates by rotation. Beta-glucosidase, N-acetylglucosaminidase, tyrosine, peptidase, acid phosphatase. Under the cover crop systems, they are active to a far higher degree than in these sort of non-cover crop systems that are largely in green. So these systems are pumping through carbon and mineralizable material pretty rapidly, and those microbial communities are pretty active. So what you might think of as the more recalcitrant carbon is much more present, and the activity of phenyloxidases and peroxidases are much higher in the non-cover crop systems. So there's this broad difference in expression of the activity across the gradient. What this means is that under the cover crop systems and during the growing season, you might not see a great deal of even ammonium or nitrate concentrations at a given point, but in terms of mineralization over the course of the season, it's far higher in the cover crop systems. They're churning out nitrogen, and that nitrogen is being cycled much more rapidly. And this mineralizable nitrogen also lasts much further into the season. So you have a pool of nitrogen that may not, if you just extract it, may not be particularly large, but if you measure it over the course of the season, it's being utilized pretty rapidly and being pumped out. And sticking sort of with the nitrogen story, we also see that the nitrous oxide flux across the rotation is far higher in the rotated in the rotations with cover crops. And this has been true for the last 2 or 3 years, where cover crops over the course of the year are producing a lot of nitrous oxide. In fact, this would be on par with the conventional cropping systems that are also at the KBS system. Okay, so sticking, just reminding you of this sort of broad and narrow process that we've been choosing to look at in terms of the soil microbiology in the system. So the nitrous oxide flux is kind of interesting, and we wanted to explore that more since the differences were so dramatic across the system. So we wanted to just pick apart the denitrification story in this a little bit further. And we have been using different targeted primer sets in the Schmidt lab to just look at nitrite reduction. So primer sets are a little bit hard with this gene. Nitrite reduction is present both in heterotrophic denitrifiers, but also in ammonia oxidizers. But in selecting primers that kind of select for ammonia oxidizers and for heterotrophic denitrifiers, we find that actually the potential for ammonia oxidizers to denitrify is much higher in the cover crop system. There seems to be this enhanced level of ammonia oxidation in the cover crop systems, and we see that in the rates of nitrification that we have in the system. So this could be contributing to this enhanced level of nitrous oxide flux across the rotation. This would be a pretty specialized process that might not otherwise be present in the more monoculture cropped end of the gradient. But that's not the full story in terms of denitrification. So this is just looking at heterotrophic denitrification, leaving ammonia oxidation out of the picture for a minute and focusing on the potential for total denitrification. Actually, what we see is that, in spite of this high flux of nitrous oxide under the cover crop sites, there's much higher complete denitrification in the cover crop sites. So they are putting out, they're emitting a lot, fluxing a lot of nitrous oxide, but on a percentage basis, they are going to complete denitrification to dinitrogen at a much higher rate than the corn, soy, wheat, simpler rotations. So just looking back at the sort of model and implications for biodiversity in ag systems, which has become a popular topic, first of all, I would just say that we do see these differences in diversity across when we enhance cropping system diversity, but there's quite a bit of overlap, and at the coarse level, this might not be as important as effects species patterns on more specialized soil processes. It's these specialized processes that we should sort of focus on when we look at biodiversity across the system. And two important implications of this, I think, are first, if there is going to be this push to enhance cropping system diversity in row crops, which may be important, I think we need to measure what matters. These types of results have important implications for soil testing and soil health, that we need to look beyond certain metrics that we're using for growers right now and telling them how to manage soil. I think the focus of research also needs to look at these narrow processes, which tend to change far more when we enhance agro-system diversity, rather than broader level functions, which can be a little bit more confounding. Thanks, and I'll take any questions.
More questions to our presenters. Yes?
I have a sense of curiosity, and I don't know if you said it in the house. What soil bank do you use?
Oh. Great question. So most of this was in 0 to 10 level of depth, and it was actually, we combined between bulk soil and rhizosphere soil for most of these measures, both for gas flux and for things like enzyme activity. So I do have collaborators working with the root architecture in the system, but I don't have that data. So yeah, it is important.